Welcome, everybody, to the health show that knows Health Talk Radio, brought to you by the Alaska Center for Natural Medicine, only on KFAR 660 AM, broadcasting to Fairbanks and beyond. So sit back, relax, and prevent a heart attack. Here's your host, Dr. Scott Looper, your guide to better health.
Good afternoon, Fairbanks. Welcome to Health Talk. I'm Dr. Looper, and I'm your host today as we talk about health, how to get it, and how to keep it. Today, our guest is Dr. Ashley May. Dr. May practices medicine right here in Fairbanks, and today we're going to talk about epigenetics. Now, the reason why we're talking about epigenetics, one thing's just dang interesting. Secondly, is Dr. May is going to be doing a talk here up at UAF in about a week. So, Dr. May, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Great to be here.
So we can't start a talk or a conversation about epigenetics without figuring out what is epigenetics. So what is it?
Yeah, I'm sure you've probably heard some of it here and there, but the actual definition of it is the changes in gene expression without changing your DNA. So the analogy I like to use is like a computer. Your DNA, your genes are your hardware. The epigenetics is the software. So it's telling what the genes to do, how to express themselves.
So we have lots and lots and lots of genes, and they're not all turned on at the same time. Most of them are in storage, locked up tight, wound tight, and out of circulation. But in the right situation, if you poke them right, they'll unwind and become available for expression, and you get all kinds of benefits or detriments.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, absolutely. Like, we all have cancer genes, tumor genes, things like that, but for the most part, you know, they're suppressed by different mechanisms, and this is one of those mechanisms.
So the story I heard is that there's diseases that run in families. Like, some families have predisposition to have heart disease, but that heart disease or those collection of heart disease genes won't turn on unless you eat cheesecake or something, right?
right. That's a good point. You need an environmental trigger. So the other analogy I use, probably not as well, but I use the analogy of a gun. So your DNA loads the gun, but your environment pulls the trigger. So even if you have those genes, if given the right environmental triggers, pollution, toxins, whatever it might be, then, you know, poor diet, all that can trigger those genes to be expressed, those kind of bad genes.
And a lot of times the reason why these bad genes are being expressed is because they're in some ways trying to solve a problem. But then there's a correction. I mean, there's a problem, but then there's long-term sequelae that comes from it. Anyways, enough of me talking. You do the talking.
Sure.
Just some examples.
Yeah. So, and then just to kind of further explain that, you know, we've got genes from our ancestors. So, you know, whatever happened to them in the past could change their genetic expression. A good example of this is the Dutch famine, you know, back in the early 1900s. The Dutch kept great medical records, and so when they noted when the people that went through this famine had significant changes generations after that, and they were like multiple generations. So if a person went through a famine and had a child, that child was much more likely to have cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and obesity later on, and their children as well. So it's like the changes that happened in that person during that famine upregulated a bunch of stuff that wanted.
So they stored energy better.
Exactly.
Now they're fat.
Exactly.
Right?
They got really good at making fat.
Yeah.
Which helped them survive, right? But in future generations where there wasn't a famine, they still had the genetics for that. So, and a lot of that has some play into some of the problem that people have today and being able to lose weight.
Isn't that interesting how it wasn't only the people who were involved in the famine, but also the second generation that was affected by that?
Right.
It makes sense when you think about could be famine still coming. They had to be set up to be able to survive that. And in the past, people did survive better, but you wouldn't, common sense wouldn't necessarily make you think that the second generation or the third generation would even be affected, and yet it is. We've seen that in other examples as well. The Pottinger's cats, they did the cat studies. Mm-hmm. It turns out, six generations later, the cats were still affected by the stuff they're doing.
So we know now that we're not only passing our genes down to other generations, we're passing on these epigenetic tags as well that affect the way that those genes are expressed.
So how do you use this, like, in real life? Like in your practice.
Yeah. So I think this is the future. I think this is, there's so much we don't know about it, but there's enough about it that we do know that I think is really going to change and personalize medicine for us. Being able to figure out, we're already doing this, you know, medications, especially psychiatric medications. Like there are panels now available that you can run to figure out, to kind of better hone down, like which medications are going to be most beneficial for you, whether it's this class of SSRIs or SNRIs or whatever it might be. And that can limit the amount of adverse effects or bad medications responses that people get.
And the testing to figure this out is genetic testing or epigenetic testing?
It's genetic testing, but some of the genetic testing can give us some insight into how your epigenetics is playing out. So there's a few different ways that your genes can be, the expression of that can be changed. One of them is called DNA methylation. Methylation is a term that you'll definitely need to get used to because it's used a lot. And all it means is you're attaching a methyl group onto a DNA a gene, typically a cysteine. And a methyl group is just one carbon and three hydrogens. But that little tag right there can shut down the expression of a gene. So say that's a tumor gene, then it stops the expression of that tumor gene. So as long as there's a methyl group on there, then that tumor gene never gets expressed. And we see this play out when in cases where there's hypomethylation, like for instance, BPA in the environment, which is a toxin found in a lot of plastics. There have been rat studies where they take these rats and they over-methylate them. So they give them a lot of folate, methyl B12, things like that. And then they give them exposure to this BPA. And then their offspring will actually be genetically different. So they may be start out fat and they'll be, or I'm sorry, they'll start off skinny. The next generation will be fat and have a different color coat.
So why is that? What's the methylation have to do with the passing over, pass on of these genes?
It's all about expression. So when you've got that, when you got plenty of the methyl donors, those methyl groups, then you can silence some of these bad genes. If you don't, then they get expressed.
And the BPA is one of the things, zillions of things, that'll block methylation or demethylize or block the normal methylation process itself, right? There's other things. I mean,
yeah,
what if you're short of methyl groups? That's one way to do it too, right?
Right. Like, so if you're not getting enough through your diet, so uncooked green leafy vegetables are a great source of folate, which is a main methyl donor. So if, say, you're deficient in that, you're not eating enough of that, then, yeah, that could be a cause. Other toxins, smoking, some great research on that. Stress. I mean, there's just a number. Most of these are lifestyle related.
So we run folate and B12 pretty commonly. And what we find is most of the time people are in the normal range with B12, but often they'll be in the low end of the normal range. Range runs from, 200 to 1,200, something like that. Mm-hmm. And they'll be, 250 or 300. So they're not exactly low, but they're on the lowish side. What's your experience of that?
Well, you got to remember what the test is telling you, too. You're only seeing serum levels of B12 and folate. So you're not actually seeing how those nutrients are interacting with the cells. So I generally like to get a red blood cell or white blood cell count of those nutrients to see what the cell level and the serum level are, and then be able to better determine what a deficiency looks like.
So where the rubber hits the road is to have the folate and the B12 and what other methyl donors be inside the cells. Outside the cells, they're not doing anything. They contribute nothing whatsoever. It's just a pool that B12 and folate is going to be coming from and other methyl donors.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? Yeah, I've seen plenty of people with normal serum B12 and folate levels, and then we run a red blood cell nutrient panel, and they're low with B12 and folate inside the
cell. So my next question, I think you just answered, which is what's the best way to find out if somebody is low in methyl donors? You just answered it. It's the red blood cell, folate, and B12. Anything else?
Well, the panel I run usually incorporates all of that, all the B vitamins and other micronutrients.
Okay, and then with all that information, you can figure out whether somebody has a methyl problem. Also, some people are just genetically predispositioned to have methylation problems, right?
Right. Yeah, that's true. And those people—
They have a gene themselves that block methylation.
Right, and that's part of the epigenetic part of it. So we can do the genetic testing for the whole methylation cycle, so MTHFR, MTRR, all those genes, and see if there's— if there are mutations or aberrations in those genes, we know that they're going to have a problem with their methylation. And it can methylation to like your mechanic for your genes. So if your mechanic's sick and it's not properly functioning, then obviously you're going to have problems expressing your genes the right way.
Good. And then bottom line is we could tell if you're broken.
Right.
And then there's fairly simple, inexpensive things to fix.
Absolutely. We get some idea of predispositions and maybe some insight into how to treat that.
Okay, excellent. So what I want to do next is talk about some examples, like in real life examples of how this works. But let's take a break first, and we'll come back with that.
Don't you dare touch that dial. More Health Talk will be back in a moment.
Can you imagine some of the weird questions a doctor receives? Here are some examples that we've gotten. Is there a pill so I can have a girl? I want to find out about my son's yin and yang. I'm allergic to cats. I'm getting a cat. Can I get a vaccination for that? Unfortunately, we can't answer all of your questions, but we can sure answer most of them. So give us your best shot and submit your inquiries to acnm.marketing@gmail.com or send them to our Facebook page. The best questions get answered by Dr. Scott Looper right here on Health Talk Radio. We're looking forward to hearing from you.
Welcome back to the conversation here on Health Talk Radio, presented by the Alaska Center for Natural Medicine. Here's your host, Dr. Scott Looper.
Dr. Ashley May is our guest today. We're talking about epigenetics. So, Dr. May, when we left off, I posed the question of, can you give me some, like, real-life examples of people who you've worked through this with and kind of problems that lend themselves to being solved through this epigenetic technology?
Okay. Well, I've been doing this for about 7-8 years, so the ones that kind of really pop out are the extreme cases, obviously. In the first year I started doing this, I had a mid-30s woman come in. She had 10 miscarriages, all in that 10 to 12 week kind of period. And obviously she had gone through, tons of other experts, and I thought, what in the world am I going to contribute to this case? But she was really interested in doing some genetic testing, like more above and beyond what she was getting at her OBGYN. So I thought, oh, well, why not? Let's just try it and see what happens. Well, she ended up having some pretty serious methylation SNPs. These are single nucleotide polymorphisms. They're not really genetic mutations, but they're little small changes in the genes, which can affect their expression. And she had what's called compound homozygous MTHFR. MTGFR is kind of it's called the rate-limiting step in the methylation cycle. So it's the big driver in that cycle. And she had a compound, so it meant two of her genes that ran that were definitely abnormal, which meant that she produced about 30% of the enzyme that she needed to, that most other people would do. And so I thought, well, this is a great place to start. So we just started supplementing her with increasingly higher doses of methylfolate and methylcobalamin, B12. And after
the particular kind of B12 that's got the methyl group attached to it, there's other kinds of B12 that don't. Do those other types of B12 work?
They don't. And sometimes, like the cheap version, the cyanocobalamin, it's actually a little bit harder on your system because it's got to go to the liver, break that cyanide off, and all that. So it's a lot harder to get that converted into its methyl form, which is the most active. It's the end of the road, active form of B12 and folate. So she could eat all the or take all the cyanocobalamin she wanted to, but it wasn't going to help her. And she had done that. She'd taken high doses of both of those in different forms. So we had her on the methyl B12, methylfolate, and some other things for a few months, and got her up to her high tolerance. And I think she ended up getting up to about 20 milligrams of folate, which is a really high dose. And she actually,
and most people take 1 milligram.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. And she was actually, I tried to get her not to conceive for at least 6 months, just so we can have some time to prep her. And then after 6 months to try to go for it. And she did. After 6 or 7 months, I think it was, she got pregnant and she was actually able to carry it to term, first try. So that was definitely an extreme case, but
yeah, got to mark that one down as a success.
Yeah. I got a few Christmas cards from her for a while, but it was great. It was really.
Did she name the baby Ashley?
No, I told her not to. No. No, she
boy
didn't.
Or girl, either way, right? She's
right.
Covered.
That's right. That's right. But that was great. I mean, that's when I got hooked too as a provider. Like this is life changing. Like this is serious stuff. And obviously, not all cases have been like that, but that was definitely one that stuck out that just really hooked me into it.
Excellent. Yeah. How about another?
Another one is this one was a weight loss patient. She had she was actually a fitness instructor for years and years. She was teaching, oh man, it had to be like 8 to 12 classes, you know, a week. And ate like a bird. Like we did diet diaries and everything. I thought, man, she's got to be sneaking food in somewhere, you know. And I pushed her to be really, really honest with me, and she was. And we just, I was at a loss. So what we did is
Wait a minute. So she was eating nothing, and she was fat.
Yeah.
And exercising, teaching exercise.
Oh, at least a
Oh, come now. That's impossible.
Right. At least 100 pounds overweight. Like, it was pretty significant, and she wasn't losing
weight. I wish I had a dollar every time I had an impossible case like this. Because they're common.
Yeah. I mean, she was eating at times less than 1,000 calories and burning, you know, double that at least.
And 100 pounds overweight.
Yeah, so the whole calories in versus calories out.
Nope.
Wasn't quite working.
So there are people listening right now who are exactly like this. By the way, y'all listen up because this is important. So how did it go?
So we did this genetic test. It's by a company called Pathway Genomics, which is great. They target a lot of this sort of diet and exercise genes that are related to how well you metabolize fat, things like that. So we ran this test on her, and sure enough, like, she had a couple of the genes that she actually did better with weight training and less cardiovascular. And all of her classes were, you know, aerobic classes, things where she's getting her heart rate up really high. And she was extremely fit, but it was causing too much of a stress on her body. So her body, just like as if it were in a famine or running from a bear, it's shutting things down. It's trying to conserve energy. So it didn't matter how low she got her calories, she was still going to conserve energy and hold on to every piece of fat that she could.
So she had to eat more.
So the secret to weight loss
is eating more.
Well, she actually had to eat more fat and exercise less. Now, looking at that, I'm thinking, there's no way this is going to work. But sure enough,
that extra 100 pounds, right? It's coming on.
Nope. We did it slowly, but over the course of 2 years, she lost over 100 pounds. It was
by exercising less and eating more.
Absolutely.
Now, again, people listen. This is important information.
Yeah.
You need to eat less and exercise. I mean, eat more and exercise less to lose weight.
Yeah, absolutely. And little things too, like there's some genes that have to do with like your eating habits, eating disinhibition and eating desire. I call it how bad do you want it gene. That's the gene that if you have it, that you're willing to go to extreme lengths to get a certain food, like a craving. If you're craving that Ben and Jerry's at 10 o'clock at night, you're willing to go 20 miles down the road to get it.
Yeah. So my experience in patients like the one you're talking about is they're only eating 1,000 calories, but the calories they're eating are something that's going to jack their blood sugars up. They're eating some sort of grain or some sort of sweet or something. Not much of it, but enough. And then you get a insulin release. And then whatever teeny little bit of sugars in your blood gets packed into storage.
Right.
And you don't have it access to use. I mean, you live on nothing, air.
Right. And we're all still afraid of fat. You know, just from years and years of telling us that it's bad for us and it's going to create heart disease. You know, for some people, some genetic, you know, people that it's actually a good thing. Like I do really well on a high fat, low carbohydrate diet. Man, you jack up my carbohydrates, though, I'll pack on weight quicker than anybody. So,
I don't know. I think I'll be right there up with you, Dr. Yeah. Man. All right, let's take another break here. We'll be back in a moment with more Health Talk.
you dare touch that dial. More Health Talk will be back in a moment.
Do you get headaches? Do you have pain? Well, look no further than licensed acupuncturist Matt Priebe. Matt is new to the Alaska Center for Natural Medicine and looking to fill up his schedule, but that won't be for long because Matt Priebe is the real deal. So call the Alaska Center for Natural Medicine at 907-452-3600 and schedule your appointment today.
Welcome back to the conversation here on Health Talk Radio, presented by the Alaska Center for Natural Medicine. Here's your host, Dr. Scott Looper.
Be still my heart. I love that. We should just, sometimes I think we should just be a music show and just play tunes. Anyways, here we're back with Dr. Ashley May. We're talking about epigenetics. And Dr. May, one of the reasons why you're on the show today is because you're going to do a talk here soon. And I want you to tell us about the talk. Tell us where you're going to be speaking, what you're going to be speaking about, so that people can come and attend, because it's open to the public, right?
Right.
It doesn't even cost anything.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, July 9th, I'm doing a talk over at UAF. This is a talk I do every year for the last few years, just on epigenetics. And it's just, it's an introductory talk, just to kind of broadly brush over what epigenetics is and why it's applicable to us now, and what's available for you to do for the general public as far as testing and things like that goes.
Good. So what are you going to talk about? I mean, you just said what you're going to talk about. Give us some examples of the kind of things you're going to go into.
Yeah, well, so
don't give us the talk. We want to save some.
Yeah, I got to save a little something. So, you know, once people know what epigenetics is, and most people have been exposed to some of it in social media, there are a lot of companies popping up right now that you can, like 23andMe, but there are others that, you know, can test your DNA and tell you if what kind of diet you want, sort of thing. So this is an intro talk to explain what it is and then how it can affect our lives. So I usually put out there a lot of like research on how it can affect, like talking about the BPA and how it can change your methylation diet as well.
So what about exercise? One of the more powerful things to really improve your health, no doubt exercise influences whether genes turn on or don't turn on, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So here's a cool one that I think you'll love. So there's a study done in Stockholm in 2014. And what they did was they asked subjects to bicycle using only one leg for 45 minutes, four times per week, for 3 months. Yeah.
And what they did. For 45 minutes with one leg?
One leg.
Come now.
Yeah. Right.
How much did they pay them? Lots, I hope.
Hopefully. Yeah. And then they took muscle biopsies of both legs before and after. And what they saw was more than 5,000 sites on the genome of the muscle cells from the exercise leg now featured these new methylation patterns compared to the non-exercise leg. So most of the genes looked like they played some type of role in energy metabolism, insulin response, and inflammation within the muscles. And so these methylation patterns, it's almost like the nervous system, you know, when you've got a damaged nerve and then the brain figures out another pathway to get around that damaged nerve. Kind of same thing here. Like body's trying to figure out other ways to get these methylation patterns to, you know, be promoted. And so exercise is one of the ways you can do that. And it's very specific. Like obviously it wasn't by doing this, you saw these same changes all throughout the body. It was just in the muscles that you were actually utilizing. So
that is an interesting study.
Yeah.
Did they pay for the therapy for these people afterwards?
Right. They're all walking in circles afterwards.
Big, thick muscles on one side, skinny little twigs on the other side.
Right.
So one of the things I'm interested in, since now I'm in my mid to late 50s, is longevity. It's funny how things change.
Right.
And I'm interested, because no doubt there's a strong connection between epigenetics and longevity. Do you have anything that comes to mind in your pile of research that addresses that?
Well, mostly it's about decreasing your risk for, you know, all these common chronic degenerative diseases, so diabetes and Alzheimer's, cancers, you know, things like that. And there's some great research on that. Actually, the first place where epigenetics was studied was in cancer. That was back in the 1980s, and particularly colorectal cancer. And they saw they found that these cancer cells had substantially hypomethylated areas, so where they lacked those methyl groups. And what the end result was, it ended up activating these oncogenes, these cancer genes, and initiated some like this chromosomal instability, which is not what you want to have. So that's one thing there is by having a good methylation system supporting that, like you're decreasing some risk there in some of these chronic degenerative diseases. Same with breast cancer. There's some really good studies on that as well. Even women with the BRCA gene, the more methylated they are or the better their methylation cycle is, the decreased risk they have for
not everybody with the BRCA gene actually gets cancer. I mean, the rates are like 75-80%, but there's still 20-25% of women, men too, that don't get breast cancer. Whoa, well, how's that even possible?
Yeah, and that's the question that they're trying to answer. Like, what makes them different? Why are they not getting it if this is supposed to be a death sentence, right? And it, the methylation aspect of it, I think, is explaining some of that. Now, when it comes to all of this with the epigenetics and genetic expression, we're still at the very tip of the iceberg. Like, there's so much we don't know. But we've gained so much exposure over the last, say, 10 years that, I mean, people like Google and some big companies are throwing some massive money into the study of this and how it applies to people, not only in disease prevention, but just optimizing health. There's a great company called Apeiron that's doing just some phenomenal work on trying to help, you know, athletes and just regular people optimize their health using this information.
So they're doing genetic studies like 23andMe and like Pathway Genomics, and then they give you a report and says, this is how you need to live. You need to exercise this much. You need to eat this much. You need to take these supplements, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, more or less. It's not as specific, but it does give you kind of some general good guidelines.
In theory, it will be someday.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, you were talking like some companies are doing maybe, you know, 3 or 4 dozen genes, you know, out of all the genes that you have. The difference is, you know, 23andMe, they're doing, I believe it's like 600,000 different genes. Apeiron does 760,000 genes. So there's a big difference in the companies out there and what you're looking at.
Yeah. Okay. What about, let's go back to the cancer. So we have a methylation problem. Is it reversible? Can you give people methylators and actually clamp down on those cancer genes?
That's an interesting question because there's actually some research, depending on the type of cancer, if you start hopping them up on methyl donors, it can actually make them worse and create more
super cancer.
That metastatic,
And now the cancer works even better than it ever did before.
Yeah.
It's a trick.
Exactly. So you got to be super careful. You can't just go out and start loading up on this stuff.
Yeah. So, Dr. May, we're at the end of the show. So, how can people get a hold of you? You practice here in Fairbanks.
I do.
If they want to see you, how do they get a hold of you?
My website is drmaynd, as a naturopathic doctor, .com, and doctor is spelled out. Or my office number is 907-302-3858.
And the talk again is going to be up at UAF.
Right. July 9th. I forget what time it is.
In the evening.
Call me at the office and I'll tell you.
Yeah, usually they start at 7, I think.
I think it's 7, but I'm not quite sure.
Anyway, thanks for being on the show. Thanks for a fascinating topic, something that really makes a difference in people's lives.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
My pleasure. And I want to thank our engineer, Mike Zuniga, for pushing all the right buttons. This has been Health Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Scott Looper, Medical Director of the Alaska Center for Natural Medicine, where we find the why to your illness. We treat the cause, and we help you to live the cure. Come see us.
Thank you very much for listening to Health Talk Radio. This show is sponsored by the Alaska Center for Natural Medicine, who you can call at 907-452-3600. To catch up with our previous episodes, log on to www.alaskacenterfornaturalmedicine.com. Our motto is clear: find the why, treat the cause, live the cure.
Ting-gong, ting-gong-gong-gong-gong-gong, ting-gong.